my grandmother's kitchen and begged that she hide them from the troopers close behind. She never hesitated a moment, but led them up the back stairway to the large bedroom in the front of the house. Her courage and ingenuity saved them, and afterwards I was fond of hearing her tell how she crowded one of them into the open fireplace and quickly replaced the screen of wallpaper, which in those days covered the bare fireplace in the summertime. The other boy in blue she hid under the feather bed, which she had barely smoothed out before the searching party burst into the house. From cellar to garret they went, but no trace of the missing fugitives did they find in that well-ordered home. My grandmother was resourceful and not easily perturbed, besides being a staunch supporter of Abraham Lincoln. Soon after the battle, the federal government provided a national cemetery on the battlefield, where thousands were buried, friend and foe, side by side. To dedicate this open-air mausoleum came the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, whose memory will ever be honored wherever the virtues of freedom, courage, love for rightness and righteousness, fidelity and compassion are cherished among men and nations. He arrived from Washington the day before the dedication and was entertained at the home of Judge David Wills, the leading citizen and neighbor of my grandparents. In the evening, with a number of my cronies, I helped swell the crowd that gathered on the sidewalk and street in front of Judge Wills' home, hoping the president might appear. But we only got a glimpse of his familiar figure, so we decided to give him a serenade and sang without accompaniment the war songs that were as well known in those days as Auld Lang Syne or Home Sweet Home. Some of them I can recall may be remembered by many now within the sound of my voice, such as Rally Round the Flag Boys, Tenting on the Old Camp Ground, Tramp, 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 the Boys Are Marching, The Battle Hymn of the Republic, and many other stirring airs that were sung and played at the firesides of the Hoosiers to form for the cemetery hill where the speaking was to take place. Here a tract of 17 acres had been purchased by the governors of 17 loyal states, and the graves of the fallen were suitably marked, friend and foe alike, nor was the unknown soldier forgotten. At the head of the procession, preceded by a mounted military band, the first I had ever seen, rode the president. He was mounted on a gray horse of medium size, which accentuated his unusual height, his long legs reaching too near the ground for either grace or good horsemanship. But however uncouth was his figure in the eyes of the crowd, in their hearts, he was beloved for his transcendent greatness, his humility, his courage, and his wisdom in the government of a nation racked and torn in the throes of a civil war. The president was escorted to the cemetery by many distinguished officers of the army, representatives of foreign countries, military and civic organizations, and the surging crowds of patriotic citizens estimated at 20,000. After the long, eloquent oration of Honorable Edward Everett of Massachusetts, conceded to be the most finished orator of his day, Lincoln arose and, with a manner serious almost to sadness, gave his brief address that rang from the hills of Gettysburg around the world and back many times, and will ever continue to reverberate in the hearts and minds of all mankind, where freedom, forgiveness, tenderness, and strength are cherished. During its delivery, with one or two other lads, I had worked my way under the platform and wiggled through the crowd in front until I stood within 15 feet of Mr. Lincoln and looked up into his serious face. A rough board platform 4 or 5 feet high had been built from which the president spoke. Across the front, over the rail behind which he stood, was draped the nation's flag, the Stars and Stripes. Old Glory, as the soldiers gallantly called it. I joined heartily in the applause that followed, which was less pronounced than that given Mr. Everett's address, which was sparkling in its eloquence and touching in its appeal. Mr. Everett himself was one of the few who, having heard Lincoln's words, knew they were imperishable, and he so expressed himself to the president as he sat down. Later he wrote Mr.